All right, here we go. Let's get started. Tonight we're going to pick up. This is Dump the Grump, Share the Joy, week three. Tonight we're going to talk about the delicate balance that's there. Next week is a family week. This next week is a family week, and then we come back. We'll still be in the You Do series and still be finished up the You Do challenge. And so we'll continue this Dump the Grump series into the next rotation as we continue to kind of follow up and round out what we're doing on Sunday mornings. If you guys are with us Sunday, you guys know the topic of the day. As I joked earlier, you know, these aren't necessarily easy. We talked about accepting one another. We talked about what that meant. We talked about the difference between tolerance, agreement, and acceptance. And we talked about how the culture has wanted to make those words interchangeable. Now, interestingly enough, as soon as it went online, within the first day, the email started coming, as I predicted it would. And you run the range of that, because when I said what I said on that particular, to illustrate that point, if you'll go back and listen carefully, as I talked about tolerance and agreement and acceptance, I mentioned one issue: evolution. That's all I said. I said, let me give you an example, and I used evolution as the example. The bulk of the people who listen, not you, you're the advanced crowd, but the bulk of the people who listen, especially those ones who listen disconnected online, they immediately drop their own issue of the day into that illustration. So immediately that gets reaction. Well, you said this. Well, no, I didn't say that. What I said was this. And I got exactly what I expected. I got response from people that said I didn't go far enough. And some people that said that I just went way too far. And I just laughed because I knew it was coming, of course. But it didn't take as long as I thought it would take. I gave it 10 days. It didn't take 10 days. And so as you can tell, I mean, there's, you know, our culture really does kind of rob us at times of what we need to do as followers. And I brought the conversation back, though, to what is a biblical. But here's what we said. Tolerance is not the same as acceptance. Tolerance is not the same as agreement. But what we crave is to be accepted. And there we have the biblical mandate that we found in Romans 15:7, where it says, accept one another just as Christ accepted you in order to bring praise to God. These were the three points that we used. And we were joking about them, of course, earlier. Discover the story of their lives. Tell me what it's like to be you. Discuss the urge to shout, where we talked about grace, truth, and in learning to deliver the duo. And I said Sunday, I'll say it again, there is a delicate balance in learning to do this, and it is tough. And if you think for a moment it's not, it is. If you think for a moment you're going to be good at this, you won't. You will work like a dog trying to figure this out. And there's going to be some days you get it right, and those are great days. And there's going to be other days that you're going to kick yourself at the end of the day because you know you didn't get it right. And so tonight I want to talk a little bit more about this idea of grace and truth and finding the right balance, because it's important. Because as Christians, we're in the process of becoming like Christ. And in John 1:14, Jesus is described as coming full of grace and truth. So if we're becoming more Christ-like, I mean, the Bible describes Jesus as being full of grace and truth. I mean, so we're gonna be that kind of person, right? We're going to be that kind of person that's full of grace and truth. And so what does that look like? Because, see, some lean so heavily toward grace that they become agreeable to everything. Everything is okay. If it makes you feel good and you're happy, that's fine. Whatever behavior you want is okay. Whatever you're doing is good because, well, God's grace is big and it's about loving Jesus. So you just do whatever you want because it's okay. And so if you lean and swing way to the end of grace, that's where you end up. Now, someone's going to say, are you saying we don't need to be full of grace? No, I'm saying you need to be full of grace, but I'm going to say you got to find a balance. You got to be full of truth as well. Because when the pendulum pulls back the other direction, then you're full of truth. Well, then when you're full of truth, you become staunch, judgmental. You become dogmatic about things. You become almost pious if you're not careful, if you don't balance it with grace. And usually when you're having a moment, a bad moment, you've swung one direction or the other. You know, you've either decided that, you know, I don't have the fight in me to take a stand for this, and I don't have the fight in me to you know, try to nudge somebody and encourage them back toward God. You just do whatever the heck you want to do. I'm not going to say a word about it. You just go with God. Now, that's being apathetic, but that's really also caring about yourself a little bit. And if you spiritualize it, then you convince yourself you're showing grace. On the other end of the spectrum, you know, if you're going to now become the priority police, then you will become that person that's always, you know, going to be the word of truth and law in somebody's life. And the truth is for a follower, what we have to do as a follower is get back to that balance between grace and truth. Hear me carefully. Grace without truth is cheap. And the grace that Jesus offers ain't cheap. But grace without truth is cheap. And truth without grace is harsh. And both extremes are ineffective. And I don't care who you are. You got to find a balance to it. And you got to have the guts to find the balance to it. And see, that's the problem with most of us. We don't have the guts to look for the balance. His grace meets people where they are. His truth won't let us stay the same. And in the culture that we live in sometimes, it's easy to buy into what I call the grace lies. The grace lies. What I mean by that is this. I'm not so bad. If God's going to save others, I'm good enough too, because I'm better than most of these guys that he's saving. That's a grace lie. You need it just like everybody else does. But we buy into the lie that we're not that bad. We also buy into the lie that that my day should be full of roses and I should be full of blessings that keep me comfortable and happy. That God owes me that. That's a grace lie. But there are followers that believe it, and they're not followers that believe it. There's television networks that are devoted to sharing that message. And you want to catch a crowd, share that message. I mean, that you feel better? Heck, you got a 50-50 shot that it might work. And they only prop up the people that it works with. We call that testimony night. And then, you know, you hear that it worked for them. It's got to work. It's got to be real, right? They wouldn't lie. No, because you can believe everything you read on the internet and see on cable TV. Another grace lie is I don't need to be grateful. I deserve what God gives me. And we don't say that one out loud, but some of us live our lives like that. Because we've already figured out we're better than some. You know, I mean, I compare myself to other people and go, well, I'm not as bad as that loser over there, you know, and I'm a lot nicer than that person over there, and I don't sin as big as that person over there. So God was lucky when he got me. Now, again, you don't say that out loud, but anytime you've ever had that moment where you kind of reared back and just thought, man, I'm so glad I'm not like that, you're starting to roar back into that little bit of a grace lie. Because what we do is then we start comparing what we do to other people's behavior, and we react to other people's behavior instead of reacting to God. But the other pendulum swings back the other way, and you can also buy into the truth lies. And the truth lies also then slap you in the face as well. Because a truth lie will tell you, well, I'm a rotten, low sinner. That's all I'm going to be. I'm just a worm. I'm going to go sit in the corner and just wring my hands because that's really all I can do before God. Well, the truth is, yes, you're a horribly broken sinner, but the grace of God says you don't have to stay that way, and he sees you for more than that. But if you don't buy into the grace part, you stay in the corner and you wring your hands because, oh, what a worm you are, yes, if you don't understand grace. A truth lie is that God's grace isn't big enough to cover my sins. And I meet people like that frequently. I know you're just talking about this Jesus stuff and Jesus loves us and stuff like that, but you don't know what I've done. You know, in those conversations, I usually say, I don't care what you've done. I really don't. But God knows already, and he loves you. That's why he went to the cross. He died for you. Another truth lie would say, he saved me from hell, but now I have to earn his blessing. And that, too, is a lie because you don't have to earn anything. And grace and truth become very hard to balance in our own lives, much less deliver the duo to others. And someone said, I'm not sure how to do that, and said, can you give me any advice when I don't know what to do? And I said, well, if you don't know what to do, keep your mouth shut. Because, I mean, it's easy to do. It's easy to open your mouth and just, you know, kind of blurt out something that later you wish you could take back, you know. And after you've said it, you can't really take it back. You just have to move forward from it. We all know how relationships work. We all know how dealing with other people work. I mean, that's just what we do. I met somebody not too long ago that had a bad moment. They said, you know, they said something and it was a reaction. And I understand where the reaction came from. But, man, they just laid into somebody. laid into somebody. And then when they were done, they just, you know, they were mad and they were angry. And they really embarrassed themselves, actually. Thought about it, came back later, and tried to apologize. And the apology is where they screwed up. Because the apology went something along the lines of, well, I never intended to. Then what did you intend to do when you said what you said? What did you think was going to happen? I mean, you went on the attack. You just said, it was never my intention. Explain to me what the intention was in that moment. Because until you can be honest about that moment, you're not really apologizing. You're just trying to make nice. See, at the root of it is a spiritual issue. The spiritual issue is you got something sideways and you are still ticked off about it. You just feel bad that you let it out the way you did because now you're embarrassed and it was an embarrassing situation for people involved. And so, but you intended to do what you got what you intended. What you need to be apologizing for is the intent. Then you can get around to apologizing for what you did. But see, for us to find that balance of how to flesh things out and to find that balance of what it looks like and to find that balance of how we live, boy, that's so, so difficult. And like I told you a minute ago, and I repeat it again, don't think this gets easy. This is serious stuff. This one another stuff is as hard as anything else. The cool thing for us is we tried to wrap around this idea of sharing joy and create joyful moments, because that's the balance to it. I mean, there is enough of that happens when you go out of your way to share joy with others that you begin to understand, I can get this right and I can flesh this out, which is why we added the challenge to the series. Because you need wins and I need wins and we can do this. Someone asked me tonight, what is the count at this point? And I mean, a lot of people haven't turned their stuff in, but we went way beyond 1,000 this past week. I mean, we may be in thousands by now, I'm not sure. So, I mean, there's a lot of you doing some amazing stuff. And you are changing the world. You're impacting the world around you. But as we flesh this out every day of our lives, these one another things are constantly things that we're going to have to work on. So as we encourage one another, we also have to learn to accept one another. And that is hard. I was trying to think about it because I knew I'd be unpacking this a little bit tonight. And I was trying to think about where the difficulty comes. And I get there's a lot of ways to go with it. I wish I could really say that I'm going to give you a great outline on this. I'm not. But I'm going to give you some things to think about. Because too often we fall into the trap of thinking that when it comes to following Jesus, obedience comes first, not loving Jesus. And I'm convinced that one of the reasons that we have so much trouble being obedient is we don't really love him very much. I mean, we discover that he first loved us. We love God in return. And then out of that love, we are compelled to obey God and live differently. But if all we do is understand the truth that God loved us, and so I need to give my heart to him, but we don't get loved, and we don't accept that love and allow that love to change us, then obedience will always be a struggle. See, obedience flows out of love. We're compelled to deal with others different. We're compelled to accept others. Why? Because we understand at some small level how big the love of Jesus is and how much he loves us. See, we get into trouble when we start trying to be obedient and accept others and start fleshing our faith, and we kind of leave love behind. We come at it with our own agenda, not his agenda. If you're taking notes, write this down. Your obedience rises the more you love him. And love is a choice, and love is a relational thing. And so the more you get to know him, the more you love him, your obedience level begins to rise the more you love him. Now, people don't have to love Jesus to do good things. A lot of people do good things. You know, to be kind is to be human. It's not doesn't necessarily make you Christ-like. You know, to say hello to your neighbor is not the epic moment to say hello to someone that says hello to you in a store. I mean, you know, that's being nice. We talked about going the extra mile. stepping into someone's life and doing that extra thing. When again, so when you guys were sharing earlier, you know, cool stories about the way that you've had to do that, especially with people that you don't necessarily like. I mean, the pizza is a winner for me tonight. God moves with a pizza. That's cool. You know, and pizza is one of those food groups that now that Bluebell's gone, I have to lean on. But the truth about who he is and who you are brings you to a moment of decision, a moment of choice. The grace he offers and gives us covers our debt in us and allows us to move forward. Ephesians 2, 8 and 9 says what? Somebody fire that out for me. Okay, look it up. Ephesians 2, and then read verse 8 and 9. For by grace you've been saved through faith. And it's a reminder that, okay, grace is how we're saved. But then Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And no man comes to the Father but by me. So even as Jesus describes what it means to connect to the Father, I mean, he reminds us that he's the way, that he is truth, and he is life. Paul comes along in the letter to the Ephesians and says, and it's his grace that allows you to get there. So what happens is we receive God's love, we accept his grace, and because of that, we live differently. There's no report card on that. It's simply a matter of we are obedient, and we're only obedient to the level that we've been loved. Sometimes we don't flesh out very well who Jesus has called us to be because, as Steve Brown says, we don't love him enough. And he's right. And so for all of us, as we sit here, we kind of look at our relationship, we put our relationship with Jesus under the microscope just a little bit, and we say, well, I want to learn to accept others better. Well, you will get better at that the more that you are loved by God and the more that you accept his love. The more that you work on that, the more that you discover that, the deeper that love relationship with him gets, you will do that. Jesus accepts us with truth and grace. I told you this past week, I mean, he accepts me. He doesn't accept my behavior. My behavior killed him. He accepts me for what he can do in me and what he can become, what I can become. He accepts me because I'm created in his image, and when God looks at me now, he looks at him through the blood of Christ. But he didn't accept my behavior ever. He didn't tell me to clean my act up before I came to him, but I had to be willing to come to him. He didn't tell me I needed to change anything, but I had to get close enough to him to be loved by him so I could change things. And see, we want it one without the other. We want, again, as I described it a couple weeks ago, the golden salvation ticket. And I said how dumb it would be to have a ticket to the theme park and stand outside the gates and never go in. But yet for followers, that's what they have. Well, I have a saving relationship with Jesus Christ. And see, a lot of times, you know, I mean, I've known people in church a long time. That's all they care about. That's the only standard we care about. Let's get them into heaven. Let's get them into heaven. Let's get them into heaven. Let's notch that, send it to Nashville if you're a Southern Baptist. And that's the most important thing. No, the most important thing is that we live the abundant life that he offered us in John 10:10, and that starts right now, today. That doesn't have something anything to do with you going to heaven. We have made death and the step into heaven the end game. That's just the next step. The end game is, Jesus said, I come that they might have life and have it more abundant. He came to set us free, so that we could live a life that we were created to live. And so, we do a lot of things, and we get busy doing a lot of things, but you're now in a challenge where you're trying to touch and change the world, and you're bumping into people. Specifically this week, we've been talking about bumping into people who are different than you, who are harder to get along with, and even your stories. I mean, they went right in line with what we knew they would, but also with what the expectation would be. I mean, isn't it odd that you start trying to flesh this out and say, okay, I'm going to apply this to my life this week. I need to learn to accept others. Well, who does God put in your path? People you got to work to accept. You know, I mean, you're going to get to the end of the week. If you really stay dogged at this thing, you say, God, did you bring everybody I don't like out of the woodwork this week? He will. Heck, you're going to find out the people that you thought you liked, you don't like as much as you thought you did. They're going to give you an opportunity to start pushing back on them a little bit. And you're going to go, man, God, what are you doing? But you got to remember that the scorecard that we're using in this thing is different. Following Jesus is about transformation. It's about abundant life. It's about life change. And it's about growth. And so when you start fleshing out what it means to live one another, with one another, as you do with one another, as you start doing that, your perspective changes, the way that you deal with things changes, everything changes. This week, we take another step. We talk about serving one another. And, you know, and that sounds easy, doesn't it? We talk about serving all the time in church, right? Okay, well, you know, has anything been easy yet this week in this series? I can promise you serving one another is not going to be quite as easy as you think, because it takes you off the pedestal. And I'm going to make a statement tonight that I'll explain Sunday, but it'll bother you till Sunday. Because I already told you before that God doesn't really care if you're happy. He wants you to have joy. So let me give you a statement about happiness. It will bother you till Sunday. And I'll explain it. And, you know, if I don't, remind me to explain it Wednesday night, because sometimes I get lost in my notes on Sunday and skip over something I wanted to say. It happens every week. So if I don't come back to this, please call me on it. We'll come back and we'll unpack it. Oh, wait, we'll take a 2-week break before I unpack it. But neither here nor there. We'll unpack it, or you can call me about it. But here's the deal. The people who are happiest in this world have the lowest expectations. The people who are happiest have the lowest expectations. And they say, are you talking about spiritually? Are you talking about what are we talking about? I'll explain that Sunday. But if you want to experience a level of happiness, joy, and satisfaction in life, guess what? Your expectations need to get in line with who Jesus is and what he's done. And all of a sudden it begins to happen that way for you. And so what I just said will make a lot of sense when I round that out Sunday, especially building off encouragement, acceptance, and then service. But there's no template for a spiritual journey. I mean, you know, that's why a few years ago, and we're going to come back around to it again, I'm going to pull the little six-sided thing out here, and we're going to put water in it to illustrate it for you again. Because there's no template to get you deeper spiritually. You have to make a choice. And we always say the formula because you've got to learn it. Direction, not intention, gets you to your destination. You set the direction for your life that has everything to do with how deep and how close you're going to be to Jesus. Good intentions do not get you closer to Jesus. Good intentions do not make you love Jesus more. Good intentions do not grow you deeper in your walk with faith. Good intentions do not mean that you're going to be a spiritual giant. If you want that to happen, you have to direct your life in that way. And you've got to make that direction of your life toward Jesus and toward the areas of your life that he wants to fine-tune, that he wants to prune, and that he wants to work on. And I don't know what the count is right now because we've done it a number of times. I mean, we've helped so many people kind of work on that pathway. You know, we kind of do that, you know, every year when somebody says, you know, this is what I kind of want to work on this year. Kind of help me out a little bit. And so we kind of talk about that and kind of steer them in the right direction. I mean, that's why every 4 weeks you've got a different summarized Bible study to choose from. You know, that's why every 4 weeks we take the break and we come back in 2 weeks to unpack what we do on Sunday morning. We're constantly trying to give you resources that you can plug and fit into your life that will help make sense of the stuff that you're hearing, because that's the journey you're on and you've got to process that. That's why Wednesday evenings is an ultimate open-ended small group. I mean, it changes. It stops. You know, you can unplug. You can plug back in. You decide on Sunday morning where you're going to plug in, and we offer the variety of stuff. And you pay attention to that and look at the diagrams. They're not up there just because we don't have anything else to put up there. They really do give you some direction for where your life is going and what you're trying to do and what you're trying to grow. And we do shift every once in a while, but there really is a plan of kind of where that next step is, what it's going to look like, what that topic's going to be. And you'll notice if you go back and look real closely, there seems to be some repeated topics. That's based on what you guys have shared. These are areas of your life that you're looking at this year, as we kind of heard back from you, and we listen on Wednesday, and we jot notes, we take these things down. So, I mean, very much a design, a master plan to try to help you find that pathway that you plug into, because that's the journey that he's placed you on. And this is the place that he's put you on that journey. Because none of this is easy. I wish it were. And I wish it were as simple as 3 points in a poem. It's not. It's tough. But when you do it, you discover there's a joy to it. Let me tell you a story. And if you don't want me to, I don't know what we're going to do. Let me tell you a story. It just seemed like the way to transition to the story. I don't know why I said that. Let me tell you a story. No, don't tell us a story. We don't want to hear it. Say amen so we can go home. On a warm, late August evening, music critic David Hajou, and I probably botched his name, wandered into a Greenwich Village, New York City jazz hotspot called the Vanguard. Maybe you heard of it. As he sat there that evening, he started listening to a small jazz combo of musicians playing under the leadership of alto saxophonist Charles McPherson. It was exactly what David had expected, exactly what was advertised. But during the second song, he noticed the trumpet player in the group who was kind of off to the side of the stage with his back turned away from the audience, but he looked familiar to the music critic. As the next song started, McPherson had the trumpeter come to center stage to take a brief solo. So the trumpeter stepped up into that one lone spotlight that they had. It revealed his face, and David turned to the stranger that was sitting next to him and said, "Isn't that Wynton Marsalis?" And the stranger said, "I seriously doubt it." So the music critic shut up. And, I mean, why would Marsalis be there? I mean, why would the world-famous jazz trumpeter be there playing as an unbilled member of a small combo, really serving a backup role, on a weeknight in New York City in the dog days of summer in August? Bad place to be. Don't want to be there. Very unlikely. But it was Wynton Marsalis. The entire four song was a showcase that Marsalis played the trumpet for, and it was a 1930s ballad, "I Don't Stand a Ghost of a Chance Without You." Now, if you're a jazz fan, you're familiar with the song. During the song, as he played, the creative genius was now on display. I mean, he took that song, and the crowd quickly realized who they were listening to, even though they never bothered to introduce him. But every jazz connoisseur knew who was now at the trumpet and who was playing the solo. His interpretation of the piece was masterful. His notes were like trumpeted words. He put syllables to the notes. The audience was mesmerized. He came to the climax of the song. The extended rendition of the title phrase was going to end the song. And he allowed each note to linger as he played, "I Don't Stand a Ghost of a Chance." And then someone's cell phone went off. And in the moment, as the trumpeter was getting ready to land that song and bring it home and wrap it up, the most dramatic point was broken when someone's cell phone went off and played a dumb little sing-song medley of electronic beeps as the man fished for it to try to silence it in his pocket. And it hung obnoxiously in the air, breaking the moment, the spellbinding moment, that the trumpeter had brought the audience to. You've been in those environments, you know exactly what happened. Some people groaned. Some people giggled because they thought it was funny. And the magical moment, there that night in the Vanguard, unraveled. Marsalis paused because he heard it as well. And because he was bringing out and dragging out every note to finish the song, he just stopped and he stood there, trumpet still at his mouth, stood motionless as the man silenced his phone, as the song stopped, as the audience reacted, and he stood there frozen and just did not move. David, the music critic, grabbed his notepad that he had brought with him to take notes that night, and he scribbled these two words, "Magic ruined." Magic ruined. You see, this week, and even tonight, we've been talking about how Jesus accepts us. And I told you he does it with grace and truth. I told you that for me, he accepts me, he just doesn't accept my behavior. I mean, I can't tell you how many times in my life I have ruined the moment that Jesus has placed me in just because I blew it. Because I wasn't paying attention, because I didn't do it right, because I let my own attitude get in the way, because I had my own plan, not his plan, because I didn't want to do it his way. I thought I had a better plan, and I thought that I could do things better than he could. And so a magical moment that he places me in to do something phenomenal, and I simply blew it. Magic ruined. Because I just couldn't get it right. And I have a gnawing feeling that I am not alone in that. I've got a gnawing feeling that most of you have been there and you've done exactly the same thing. That you've been a part of something that God is just doing that's amazing, that's phenomenal, and all of a sudden because you got some wild hair, you got some some cork up your backside, or you got some twitch in your neck, you just blew it. And a lot of times when we blow it like that, we don't know what to do. And so we compound the moment lost by creating more moments lost behind it. I mean, sometimes we spin out and go into wild rebellion, and sometimes we just spin out and just go into just crazy mode. And sometimes we just get so embarrassed and we do dumb things, and it just gets worse and worse and worse. And then you feel like you're never going to get that moment back. And just like that guy who's there at the Vanguard that night in the middle of what was one of the neat moments of music for anybody that was there, what a colossal screw-up. He didn't turn his cell phone off. You know why? Because he wasn't thinking about anybody else. There was not another thought that something could go wrong. He wasn't thinking about anybody else. He didn't care enough about everybody there to take the time to turn off his cell phone. And most times when a cell phone goes off, it's not a big deal. Most times if a cell phone goes off, I just go, oh, I've been there, done that. Because we've all done that. Why? Because we just don't care enough about others around us sometimes to think about the environment we're in. So we just don't do it. Because why? Well, we're just busy doing our own thing. We'd rather talk about this or do this or do this. And we run a thing on Sunday morning that says, check your cell phones. Look for it next Sunday if you've never seen it. They run them in theaters all the time. They run funny little movies. When's the last time you went to a movie that you paid for that somebody's phone didn't go off? Or you didn't see the glow of their light blinding you in the dark, at the wrong time of a movie? Why? They don't care about you. They care about themselves and what they want. But hey, hold on. It's not the end of the story. Where was that? Oh, Marcellus was standing motionless. Trumpet still at his mouth, and he waited. As quiet again kind of settled over the crowd, the giggling stopped, the groaning stopped, the cell phone stopped, and he still hadn't moved. And as quiet fell across the Vanguard, he played the medley that the cell phone had played, note for note. And then the master trumpeter played it again, this time with different accents. And then he played it again, and he began changing keys. And the audience was drawn in again as he began to play, because he began taking those notes that were played with that dumb little medley of the cell phone, and he began to play it over and over again, and he began to twist it and mold it and make it into something spectacular that they had never heard, that has never been heard in human history before, because he was making it up on the spot. And he continued to play, and it wasn't long until the audience was now leaning forward on their seats, and once again, the master musician had come alongside them and taken them on a journey they didn't know that they were going on. And he was playing something that everyone who heard it knew they were listening to something that no one had ever heard, and it was absolutely extraordinary. And around Marcellus played, weaving glory out of goofiness. In and out, he moved this music. And all of a sudden, he got to the end, and he, with a master stroke of brilliance, he then wound down the song seamlessly into the last two notes of the previous song that had been interrupted. And he got back to the line so he could finish his original song with you. And he took the trumpet down and he stepped back. And the audience went crazy. And the truth is, I'm a colossal screw up. I know that about me. But when I choose to love him, his grace comes in and takes every screw up of my life and blends it together as a masterpiece. Where if I will love him and if I will follow him, he takes the mess ups of my life and turns it into something beautiful, because I am his workmanship and I am his project. And he wants to mold and make me into something else. And he calls me to touch and change the world with his love and to share with one another. But all he says to me over and over again every day of my life is, Jeff, love me enough to let me work in you. You want to get it right? You want to change the world? Love him enough to let him work in you. Love him enough to trust him. Take the challenge. Change the world and share with others what he's done in you. And learn to accept him with grace and truth. Not one or the other, but both. and strive to find the delicate balance in the midst of it. And trust me when I tell you this. If you will be willing to love him enough to get in the game, he takes what he does and he works all things together for good for those who know him and love him and follow him. Let's pray. God, you give us so many chances to get it right. And on our best days, we still screw it up. That doesn't surprise you, and we're glad. But we're also glad that you take our mess ups and make masterpieces out of them. If we're willing to love you, and stay in the game, and do and become what we were created to be. Well, to pray for each person in this room, because I know a lot of them are taking the You Do challenge, and a lot of them are trying to find ways to create extra mile moments for those that they meet. And I pray that you would just continue to bless them and be with them as they do that. I pray to God that they would just see amazing results. I pray that they would just be able to celebrate with one another the good things you're doing. And Heavenly Father, I ask that you would just help us to be challenged over and over again to make sure that we live our lives differently because of your love. Help us to love you. Teach us how to follow you closer. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.